From Calvary Church of Santa Ana, this is the Calvary Life Podcast, the show where we share stories, laugh together, and have discussions about faith, life, and God with people from Calvary Church. Here's your host, Eric Wakeling.
All right, welcome to the Calvary Life Podcast. I'm Eric Wakeling and excited for you to be listening and watching this current episode. We have with us today Tom and Gail Shook, Calvary Church missionaries and just part of the Calvary family. And welcome, you guys. It's good to have you.
Thanks for having us.
It's fun to be
here. Great.
Absolutely. It's good to have you. So you guys have done a lot like in your lives. I don't know how you feel about, but I don't know how do you feel about people when they kind of respond like, wow, you went to Mongolia and Northeast Asia and to refugee camps and all that. Does it like feel just like, yeah, that's just my life? Or what, you know, what's your response?
I don't know. I kind of feel like it's just my life.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it doesn't seem abnormal.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right?
Right.
So maybe like, before I went to Mongolia, if somebody told me that was going to be my life, I might have had second thoughts, but no.
Exactly.
Yeah. You know what I mean? But no, every step is a step.
Yep.
Right?
Right. So. And I just feel like if it's what we're meant to do.
Right.
You know, it's like what we're meant, you know.
And totally everybody blessed has, to do it. Hmm. Totally feel like.
Yeah, everybody has their place in the body of Christ, right? And it's like, this is ours.
Yep.
You know, for whatever reason.
Yeah. But, yeah, and I didn't know what, you know, I didn't know 20 years ago where I'd be today. And I took one step in front of, you know, at the same time. Or if I was a junior high pastor and just trying to do my thing. And then somebody said you'd be in the seat now. And I'd be like, no, I don't know.
Right. Yeah. You know, or whatever. I don't think so.
I would have called me a sellout, actually, at the time. But, but hey, just I'd love to hear a little bit of maybe first of all, like some of like your Jesus origin story, like how you got saved, like some of that, and then into like how you came to Calvary and what's your Calvary origins. Right. Yeah.
I came to Christ actually through my brother. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't raised in a Christian home, so, and neither of my parents were or are believers.
Okay.
But he became a Christian in high school. So he graduated, went off to college, and I ended up going to a college-age Bible study.
Okay.
As here? A junior higher. No, it was in Garden Grove.
Okay.
I grew up in Garden Grove.
A college study as a junior higher.
As a junior higher. Oh, so
mature.
Don't turn them all away. But that's where I heard the gospel for the first time.
Wow.
And I remember accepting the Lord, you know, raising my hand, praying, and I remember walking out of this Quaker church, actually, and looking up at the stars going, I know who God is.
Wow.
And that really was the beginning of my journey. It wasn't a very smooth path.
Okay. We all have some rocky paths along the way.
Yeah.
Same here.
My mom really struggled with mental illness.
Okay.
And so my high school years were really hard. So during that time, I was actually going to Melodyland.
Oh, yeah. That's
by
where,
Disneyland.
That's where I was dedicated as a baby. My parents went there.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes.
That is so funny.
You were probably there.
I know. Yeah, it's possible.
In junior high, high school. Yeah.
I was like 74, 75 when I was there.
Yeah.
Probably not. But I remember they were going to start building a high school. And the high school pastor was really encouraging us to go. And I said, you know, my parents will never let me go. Mm. And he made the comment that I didn't have enough faith.
Oh, okay.
And at that point, because of a lot of circumstances beforehand, and especially being a kid, I just felt like nobody understood my journey. Everybody else seemed to have a perfect life. Mm-hmm. And mine wasn't perfect when I went home.
Mm-hmm.
So I decided, you know what? I don't need church. It's me and Jesus, we got this. But that only lasts a certain amount of time before all of a sudden
without
you don't have it, right? You're not in the Word and you're not praying. And slowly but surely fell away from the Lord. And then that's when I met Tom.
Okay. And so then that, like, he dragged you downhill then at that point? Or what?
No, big time. A little bit.
No, I know a little bit. I know it's true.
Yeah.
So then where'd it go from there then?
Well, you. Okay, so we have similar backgrounds, right, in terms of the growing up. But then, you know, I was like really an angry kid, right? Just because of our circumstances of living, you know, and you know, my folks split up, and I'm one of seven, and I'm the middle kid.
Okay.
But the top three left, right? They were old enough to be out of the house.
Okay.
So I was the oldest at the time when all of it was kind of going down or whatever, you know.
Okay. And this is like high school time that you're talking about?
Yeah, little high school. Yeah. Okay. Beginning of high school.
Yeah.
So, and then basically, you know, it just set me on a trajectory where I was just really, really mad about everything, you know. And so what I did is when I graduated high school, and they basically let me graduate because I didn't care about school, right?
Yeah.
I hated all the teachers. I didn't, you know, I was that kid that was always by the door.
Yeah.
And scooting out the back and all that kind of stuff, right? So.
But they were kind of like, just let's get him out of here. Let's
let him. Yeah, that's it, right? So I did that ROP stuff, you know, where you go to the, you know, I went to another elementary school and I worked as a teacher's aide.
Okay.
And that's how they got me enough credits to get me out, kind of, you know, to let me graduate high school. So I graduated.
Okay.
So, but then I took a trip to Europe. So in those days, you know, people were doing these backpack deals, right? So I donned a backpack and I was like, I'm getting out of here, you know, and just went and just took off.
Yeah.
And I went to Europe and traveled and bummed around for a few months and then made my way back, right? And so one of the takeaways from that, it changed me because I felt that my anger was kind of subsiding, right? So I could see people for people. You know, not everybody was an enemy or something,
right,
you know?
Right.
And then I went to a party, right? So I went to this party and, you know, it was a regular party and they were playing pool. Yeah. And then, you know, I met Gail there at that party.
Yes. Okay.
Right. And so she came on to me. We're playing pool. I have no idea what's going on.
Yeah.
Because I'm just stupid.
He's never had a girlfriend before.
So, yeah. Yeah. So, you know, and then from there, we just kind of really hit it off. And we just kind of had the same, you know, ideas and thoughts. And, you know, so we just got together. Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that was our first date was in November and we went to see a Police concert.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Mm-hmm.
And so Tom's hair was really long and he wore an earring. He had an earring then.
Back then when you weren't supposed to.
And and I remember telling my dad, do not say anything about his earring when he comes and picks me up.
Yeah.
And he didn't. He was very kind.
Classic.
Right.
Yeah.
So but anyways, so, you know, fast forward a few months. And Gail's pregnant, right? So we're 6 months into this relationship, and then she's pregnant. We moved out, right? And she's pregnant, and I'm working in a sheet metal shop. You know, I mean, I love the work, you know, and all that. But now we're going to have a baby, right? Mm-hmm. So we're like, okay,
serious, right?
I guess we better just go to Vegas, go and we just get married, right? So we got in our little, I borrowed my sister's VW Bug. And we basically drove to Vegas the one day, got married, and then came back the following day.
Okay.
Because you have to work the following day. You know, so it was just like that.
Oh, wow.
That kind of thing.
Yeah, straight back
like
to work.
Jump.
Get married, back to work.
Jump right in. And, I mean, you know, and then Ryan was born, and then, of course, that was amazing.
Yes.
You know, even though I didn't know the Lord.
Right.
It was an amazing experience.
Mm-hmm.
And, but then 6 months later, after he was born, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then she's pregnant again, right? So now we have two kids, Joy and Ryan.
Yeah.
We're little
and,
pups.
You know, and this, you know, this thing in the back of my mind is like, you know, you have to get out of here, right?
Out this, of this relationship.
Out of this
whole
situation. I just got to run and do something, right?
Okay.
I got to basically get out of here because I cannot.
This is too much.
It's just too much, right?
Yeah.
21 and two kids and just not really knowing what to do, right?
Yeah.
So, and the examples I had, right, was my dad bailed, and, you know, so it's like, hey, let's just get out of here.
Yep.
And then...
Can I mention?
Yeah,
just
go ahead.
My brother. So what happened when I had to call my mom and tell her I was pregnant, we were getting married the next day because we were going to take off and go to Las Vegas. She was really mad at me because she wanted me to have a wedding.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't care that I was pregnant. Just
right.
Write that, but I'm like, I'm not having a wedding.
More what she lost than what you were, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But in that process, I had been with some Christians that were really negative about the fact that I found myself unwed and married, which obviously
pregnant.
I, Unmarried, yeah, unwed and unmarried.
That's fine. I didn't hear it either.
No, unwed and pregnant.
There you go.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Obviously not a good thing. But I remember at the time feeling like, okay, I'm going to have this baby. So why are we so mad at me? Like, I already know I was wrong. Like, you don't have to convince me. I already knew I was wrong. But my mom, after I told her, said, well, you have to talk to your brother. Because he's the only Christian in the family. Okay. She knew I had become a Christian, so this is going to be shameful for me.
This
is punitive.
My brother.
Yeah.
So I just remember calling my brother and saying, Mark, I just wanted you to know that I'm pregnant. And he said, praise the Lord, a new life. And that just rang in my ears. Yeah. It's like, that's what I needed. Like, because I already knew I was wrong. So I just needed that affirmation. And my brother was that continually. And so after Joy Lynn, well, actually, it was when I was pregnant with Joy Lynn, he started taking us to churches.
He's like, if I don't do something, you know, he's going to try to help us or something. You know?
But Tom's hair was still long. So it's like, where do you go? Right?
His church is different then, right?
Yeah, a bit different. So it's like he took us to a Baptist church, and he took us to a, I don't know, a Lutheran church.
Several different places,
right? And I'm just like, what is this? This is weird.
I don't need this.
I need this, like I need a hole in my head.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So there's this battle now raging in me, right? So here's the thing, is that his life, you know, the thing about a believer, right, is that there's something that's so attractive because there's this sense of peace, you know, not perfection, but just a sense of peace that they have that the world doesn't really know about, right? So you look on that and you're like, how do they get that? Why I'm so angry inside at my stupid decisions and my mistakes and my just people and everything.
Yeah.
But how can that guy just kind of get up every day, go do work and come home, enjoy his family and... You know, and I know he wasn't perfect, but at that time, you know, it was just like something's there. So that was attractive to me, right? So that's why I was kept in the game.
Okay.
And I would go along with him and go to the church because there was that little bit of, wow, there's something about this Jesus, this Christianity. I can't put my finger on it yet, but there was something there.
Isn't that just my constant prayer? Like, Lord, please make me like that. You know?
Yeah.
So. And he was. We ended up at Calvary Chapel Downey.
Okay.
And for the next 2 years, were in battle.
Just war.
Just war between the two of us.
Man, we'd wake up and, you know, we would just go at it because of the, you know, it's like it just took me 2 years to come to faith, right?
Yeah.
Of just going to church off and on.
Okay.
I wasn't very good. We'd argue every Sunday morning about if we were going to go to church or not go to church.
Right.
And probably we went about half the time, I would say. But I was an awful woman who left a track on the toilet, who I remember arguing with them in a drive-in movie with our two kids in the back sleeping. And I'm like, why don't you want to become a Christian? Like, why don't you just give it up? And he's like, because I know God will send me to Africa. I'm like, he's not going to send you to Africa. Get real. This is us.
Yeah.
So I wasn't that gentle and quiet spirit that Sarah was.
Okay.
Yeah.
But God is merciful.
Yeah, amen.
There you go.
Right?
Yeah.
That, you know, he takes in account your own anxieties and personality. And,
Right, for sure.
Right. Yeah.
So then basically 2 years in and out, going to church, but, you know, things started to sink in, right?
Okay.
And then it was Easter Sunday. Sunrise service at Cerritos Stadium.
Nice.
Right? You did an annual sunrise service.
Yep.
So I was there. We had Ryan and Joy in feety pajamas, you know? And the Lord, clearly, he said, you know, he wanted me to come to go down and make a commitment and to follow him. And then I stood up and I was like, I'm going to go down there. If you go down with me, I'll go down there. and I'll accept Christ.
Well, he said, I'm going to go down there. Come on. And I'm like, I don't want to go down
there. She's like, I'm not going down there.
I don't want everyone to look at me.
In front of all these people, so, yeah.
And he said, if you don't go,
If you don't go, I'm not going.
Okay.
So she's like, ding. Okay. She stood up.
I mean,
we all went down there as a family and accepted Christ there.
Yeah. Wow. And that was, I've shared a lot here at Calvary, so it's not something necessarily new, but it really was for me an incredible time to see my husband close his eyes one man and open them up another.
Wow. Yeah, it's a miracle.
Because I felt loved for the very first time.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah. In our relationship.
Yeah, everything changed.
Everything changed.
Everything changed.
Yeah.
So
beautiful, like testimony to like the Holy Spirit, right? Like, who God is. That's incredible.
Right.
Wow. His mercy.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In our life.
So. Okay, but so then you said, you know, Lord, just I'm not going to do this because you're going to send me to Africa.
Right.
And he didn't send you to Africa, I guess, right?
No, he didn't. So.
But pretty soon he sent you somewhere, right?
Yeah.
So, like, how's that?
So, okay, so like 2 years. So we were involved in like a small band of believers, group Bible study. We all kind of came to Christ at the same time.
Okay.
And so we were always meeting together and, you know, somebody said missions.
Yeah.
And so we were kind of attracted to that.
We didn't even, somebody said missionary, and I didn't know what a missionary was.
We weren't sure what it meant. Mm-hmm. All we knew, you know, was that it was something.
Yeah, but everybody in this small group in particular had like a vision for their life.
Yeah.
Like something that they felt like, oh, God
wants
me to go in this direction.
And
we were like, oh, we don't really, you know.
We're not really sure.
We're not really sure. Never thought about it.
But did it make you think about it, you know, because of that?
Oh, yeah.
It did.
Yeah. Cool.
And then the Keith Green video, right, was probably a real turning point.
It was a New Year's Eve, and we saw the memorial video that he did, and he didn't do, but his wife did. And at the end, she says, don't pray to be a missionary. Just pray to be willing to go anywhere and do anything. Hmm. So that seemed to us at the time like
that's a doable goal.
That's a doable goal. Yep. We can pray every day for that.
We can just pray.
Yeah.
Lord will be willing to do whatever he wants to do.
I can just like still hear Keith Green making me feel guilty saying, I don't need your money. I want your life.
Right.
Yeah.
You know,
right? Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
So we're out of that.
Yeah.
but inspiring.
Yeah, Yeah. He wanted
definitely.
All of it.
So, that's cool.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we watched that video. We started praying. And, you know, just how the Lord orchestrates events at Downey. I mean, we were there every single day. Anytime the church was open, we were there.
Okay.
And so, and then we were serving on Sunday. And so the children's pastor at the time was, his heart was really for missions. So we talked to him about the video, all this kind of stuff. And he goes, you know what? I think you guys should go to this missions prayer meeting. And so we went, and somebody gave us Operation World.
Oh, yeah.
And so we thought...
Explain what that is real quick.
Oh, yeah. Operation World is a book that goes through every country in the world and gives stats on Christianity, on whatever religious situation.
Bit of cultural stuff.
Yeah.
Culture. People who are working there, not working.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of that kind of stuff. So we got it, thought... That sounds good. Let's start using that as we're praying to go anywhere and do anything. We did get to Mongolia, and there was no Bible and no Christian witness.
Communist,
because it was
at the time.
A part of the Soviet Union.
Right.
The next day, I think, was Morocco. I just went on, and Tom stayed.
We've got stuck.
Got stuck on Mongolia.
Got stuck right there. Okay. So, and really, it was, you know, in the sense that I just could not handle the idea that they didn't have the gospel, right?
Yeah.
So, like, he changed me completely, right? And I'm like, people got to know.
Yeah.
You know, they need to know about this, right? So.
Yeah.
And what can we do? You know, what can we do? And it was like Mongolia was like, those people need to know about Jesus and somebody's got to go do it.
Yep.
So let's go do it, you know. And that's kind of where it just got stuck. And
so he took me to a map at church at Calvary Downey. We had an international student and it was a goodbye party. And he goes, Gail, I know where God wants us to go. I'm like, okay, I'll go to the mat. By this time, I've got three kids. James is on my hip.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And he goes, he wants us to go here. And he points to Mongolia. And me being such a God-fearing woman said, are you crazy? I was just like...
I mean, it's a place of jokes. Like, you joke to say send someone to Mongolia.
Yeah, and just where it's at. I mean, it's below Russia and above China.
Yeah.
Like, where do people hate America, you know, at the time,
right?
Yeah.
So I was kind of being not very nice, but I'm like, what are you going to do? Parachute us in? And Tom said, hey, Gail... If God's calling us, it's up to him to get us there.
Yeah.
We just have to be willing.
Mm.
And that kind of changed.
Yep.
I never thought we would get there, though.
Yep.
Ever.
Okay.
Thought we would ever get there. But
as you're holding your baby.
Yeah.
So then, you know, we go to the church, right? And we're like, hey, God wants us to go to Mongolia.
Yeah.
And they're like, no, I don't think so.
That's not on our vision list or
whatever.
That's
not going to happen.
Yeah.
You know? And I think at that time, the Calvary Chapels were mainly, you know, they were mainly local.
Oh, yeah.
They did a little bit of missions, but they really were not global in that the way they, you know, it is now.
Yeah.
Or whatever, you know. So we're like, well, what are we going to do? You know, because the Lord's calling us to go to Mongolia. And then that's when, through homeschooling relationship.
Yeah, there was a gal who was attending here.
Okay.
And so she was a friend, and we were homeschooling, and I was telling her the situation. And she's like, Gail, you got to come to my church. There's missionaries all over the place, you know. And I'm like, okay. So he came down as when David Hawking was the pastor. And so we started coming on Sunday nights to... Oh, Don Richardson?
Don Richardson, evangelism thing.
And so that was really our introduction into Calvary.
Is that like the evangelism explosion kind of stuff?
Yeah, kind of. That's basically that version, a different version of that basic thing.
Yeah, that's right. Probably not exactly that, but something similar.
Right.
But, and then so we decided to attend and apply to become a member, and the first person to visit us was Fred Morse.
Oh, yeah.
That's great. That man has been...
He's amazing.
Just walked through a lot of fire with us and has really been an encouragement.
Mm-hmm. And if you need an example of how to share the gospel, you know, as a young believer that's motivated, but maybe isn't trained or whatever, I don't know.
Yeah.
I always say he has like this lasso of people into heaven. Like he just kind of, like, you know. Yeah.
Well, and his God is big.
His God
is big. So
yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
He serves a big God.
Where we could go and say, okay, we have no education.
Right.
We have three children.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And God is calling us to Mongolia. Especially then, during that time, an education was everything.
Yes,
back in the day.
And so
we'll see you in 6 years when you have a, you know,
once you get your MDiv, then you guys can maybe you're ready.
Yeah,
you know, still have to do some other training, but you know,
right.
But Fred,
still kind of like that.
Yeah, got it.
Fred never said that.
No.
Okay,
he's just like, no, okay.
He's like, all righty then. I guess you guys should.
That's great.
You guys should get involved in the.
PMT.
What is it? The practical missionary training program.
Oh, there you go.
So practical, okay.
So that's what we did.
We just did that.
That's cool.
Did get 2 years of the Bible, and right when we graduated, the Soviet Union fell, and we went to Mongolia.
Okay.
That's it.
So, wow. Yep. Incredible. And so then, now in a you get to Mongolia. You guys didn't end up in like some big city or something, right? Like you were in like kind of rural area. Is that right?
Yeah, two rural areas
over
the 17 years that we're there.
Okay.
Yeah.
But Mongolia itself is the second least populated
country.
So even the big cities.
So even the big cities aren't big compared to ours.
Not by American standards at all.
Yeah.
But 30,000, between 30,000 and 40,000 people.
Oh, yeah. That's like smaller intestine.
And very rural.
Yeah, rural with cows and...
Sheep
all that kind
and goats
of good stuff.
And yeah. We had no electricity for most of the time and no running water.
Okay.
So
that's amazing.
Yeah.
You know?
And when we first got there, so everything had collapsed, right? The former system that they were under collapsed. And so, you know, there were food shortages and there were, you know, all kinds of problems.
Yes.
And so when we got there, we thought that hey, this is going to be okay. We're going to get there, and the agency we're serving with, you know, they're going to have things all good. You know, they'll have things set up, and we'll just kind of step into the ministry that we're supposed to be doing. You know, we get there, and there's nothing. There's nothing, you know.
It's cowboy.
And so it's cowboy all the way. And
I mean, like, any sense of a team, or are you just solo?
Well, no. We had people. We had a team that was there, but nobody kind of knew what to do or what was going on, right? So it's all new people in a new situation.
Yeah. And part of the world that's in utter chaos.
And utter chaos, right? Yeah. But, you know, we found a dictionary, and I found a Mongolian, and from 1966, a Mongolian Russian English dictionary.
Okay.
And because you had to work, you know, you couldn't just
read the dictionary. You had to negotiate your contracts.
You had to have a job,
visa.
Right?
So
to make contracts with government and stuff like that, I couldn't speak any Mongolian yet, but I was using that dictionary and trying to get things done and get us to where we could.
But it is, you know, on the fact that it's kind of crazy, works in your favor in some way, because nobody knows what they're doing.
Yeah.
So, you know, the government doesn't know. And
So they were pretty permissive for the things that we were suggesting.
They allowed us to
do. So what was your job while you're there? What was your career, you know, cover or whatever?
Yeah. So we did obviously several things over the year, but most of it was what they would call a toslim chingbagula, which means helping. Yeah, which is it's basically a helping company.
Yeah,
it's a helping company, right? So it'd be like a humanitarian.
Oh, okay.
Helping company. So that's basically what got us in there. And then our first contract was with a children's department. You know, underneath that old system, right? They have it's all segmented, and so you have the children's department.
Okay.
And then so we worked with them, and then partnered with UNICEF.
Okay.
And we did some things in the very beginning.
Okay.
Nutrition stuff like
aid.
That. So
food aid.
And is the hope or the goal then to just build relationships with people as you're doing
of
that?
Learn the language first 2 years, right?
Yeah.
Just 6 years. But you know, they said it was going to be 2 years.
Yeah.
But we were functional in 2 years.
Okay.
You know?
But there's no YouTube videos. There's no apps on your phone. You know, this is a different time.
Yeah, totally different time.
And Mongolia. It's like
no internet.
Even now, who's offering Mongolian classes? Or whatever.
Exactly. Because up until then, nobody had learned Mongolian. So even any teachers who taught Mongolian, they taught Mongolian to Mongolians, which is very different from teaching Mongolian to a non-Mongolian speaker.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Right?
Yeah.
So you were always wondering if what she was teaching you was really what you were wanting or knowing. But Tom was excellent at learning language.
Cool.
So he
just had a knack. I don't know. God's gift, I guess.
Are there a lot of dialects there, or is it a primary language?
Primary language.
Yeah, you have little accents.
Homogeneous.
Okay.
It's a homogeneous group with their own language.
Okay.
So.
Yeah. Okay. So, so you're learning that language. And then you're also raising a family and... Like, I don't know, just any stories of what it's like raising a family. You know, you're talking about having, you know, 4 kids, right, this time?
No, 3 kids.
I only have
3 kids.
Okay, yeah, 3 kids, sorry.
It's okay.
Whoops, I gave you another one.
Another one that I didn't know about.
So, 4 kids, I mean, 3 kids, and you're trying to, running water, right? No.
Well, I mean, there's a ton of stories, because it's such a weird time of life there anyways, in the fall of the Soviet Union, and living.
It's amazing.
It just was amazing. But like Joy, if you took a bath, we took a bath in a tub, in a
footlocker.
Yeah.
A Rubbermaid footlocker. And when she would run out to the outhouse with her hair wet, because it's freezing about 6 months out of the year, her hair would freeze before she even got to the outhouse. So
she comes back in and crunches her hair.
Oh my.
Yeah.
That's wild.
My kids have dug outhouses, because we've always had to move an outhouse from time to time. Mm-hmm. So they've been the main diggers.
Yeah. But in the footlocker, so you had to ration water too, because we had to go to a well to get water. Right? We didn't have running water.
Yeah.
So you got to go there. And of course, James would be him and his crew. You know, we'd send them to go fetch the water, but it only comes in like a 40-liter can.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And so you rationed water is what I'm getting at.
Okay.
So then we would put a couple of inches in the bottom of this footlocker.
Yeah.
And who would go first?
Joy would go first.
Joy would go first.
Then we would add more hot water.
Add a little bit more.
Okay. And then
from the
Ryan
stove,
would
the,
go.
The wood burning stove.
The wood burning stove, because you've got to heat the water.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. And then after Ryan was James, because James was
filthy.
Because it's only dirt. We live in dirt.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
There's no concrete anywhere.
Right.
You know, it's all dirt. So he used to, it was awful. But so he would take his bath, and then Tom would dump it out, fill it up again with fresh water, and I would take my bath, and then he would use my water.
Okay. Oh, man.
We did that for
years.
Decades. You know, at least a decade,
yeah,
if not more.
Decade. Yeah. Yeah. The entire time of raising your kids, right?
Yeah. Well, you get pretty good at it.
Yeah.
Wow.
So.
Yeah. Anyways.
But I remember once, I mean, there's a ton of stories, but this one in particular, when you think about kids, initially everything was rationed because it's, you know, post-Soviet Union. So you only could get so much bread or so much this or whatever. And then slowly that started to go away. Well, in the midst of this, they had a flour shortage. So they came out in the news and said, our factory will not be producing any flour.
Okay.
Now, during that time, really, like, bread is what that made you feel full.
Yeah.
There was no food.
Yeah.
I mean, you could have so much money and not buy anything.
Oh, wow.
You know what I mean? Not find anything.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And so we were really anxious about when it was going to come up and all this stuff. And so I was getting that 40 liter water thing to go to the well.
Okay.
And I heard that the bread truck was going to come, right? So I'm at the well, and all of a sudden I see the bread truck come to the place. Well, it's all first come, first served. Like, this is...
It gets, like, 5 minutes, it's out.
It's gone, right?
It's all gone.
You're, like, fighting for food. So. And so I'm sitting at the well waiting for the well lady to get there and fill up my water. But then I see the truck, and I'm like, oh, my gosh, I don't know what to do. What's most important? Do I need water or bread?
Oh, my goodness.
Water or bread?
Yeah.
And then right then I see James, who was probably 8 or 9.
Eight.
With his, two of his Mongolian friends, you know, just running into the store. And then as they come out of the store, they all each had two loaves.
Oh,
and they're skipping and hopping and jumping.
It was like the greatest thing ever.
Yes.
Like, oh, my Lord. How many kids care about bread, right?
Exactly.
And I thought, so we had tons
priceless.
Of stories.
They're just priceless.
Yeah. It is. That's beautiful. That's beautiful and wild. And, you know, it's just like, that's not your candy or your baseball cards or your video games, you know?
It was bread.
Bread.
We were hungry.
Maybe you can get a little, like, deeper sense of, like, Jesus is the bread of life.
And, there we go.
You know, living water, like, all these.
Yeah. Definitely the reality of God.
Mm-hmm.
Not that I didn't feel that before, but there you have a constant need.
Yeah, dependency,
That absolutely. You're forced to have. It's not out of choice, but you're there.
Yeah, it just is.
It just is. And so that's a blessing. It's hard living, but it's a blessed life.
Yep,
for
sure. Did you even find that the New Testament's more of like an agrarian society, and then you're more there, you're probably more in an agrarian society than we are here in cities and suburbs. Like, we almost have to sort of translate the culture of the Bible into people's you know, lives.
Yeah.
I wonder if did you find that some of that stuff would connect with people?
Much easier.
Yeah, much easier.
You know, animals, obviously, right?
Yeah.
Sheep and
things
sacrifice
like that, and all that. Yeah.
So I'm trying to think of the you know, they don't, so we compartmentalize a lot. Right. So we have our, you know, spiritual life and our work life, and our friends are in this compartment and that compartment. And because they all grow up and they're all part of the community, and the spiritual life is all intertwined, right, at every level.
Mm-hmm.
So so it's easier for them to make certain jumps that we have to try to, you know, do mental gymnastics to try to make it fit or whatever, or just it comes natural.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, to them.
What's like the sort of prevailing, though, then religious belief, you know, of people while you're there?
Yeah. So you would say they're animistic, you know, which basically would be closer to like a Native American.
Okay.
belief system, yeah. you know, with yeah. the spirits and rocks and,
yep.
you know, trees and geographic places and rivers.
Yeah.
And,
okay.
It's the birthplace of shamanism.
The shaman. Okay.
So we saw a lot of that, had yep. high places. That was different.
Okay. Yep.
The Old Testament really came
really
alive.
Comes alive.
Okay. Yeah. yeah.
Because yeah. offerings,
basically,
we had
there.
A high place near where we lived.
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah.
And we had one time we were in a train with a Buddhist monk, because it's kind of Buddhism was forced on them by their neighbors to pacify them.
Okay.
Because the warring yeah. tribes.
Okay.
So they have a cloak of Buddhism, but really they're animists.
At
the root of it.
Right.
And this poor man, the whole night, it was an overnight train, was crying throughout his sleep. He was moaning. It was, I prayed the whole time, because we're, you know, in the small compartment, because the reality of spiritual
evil forces
is yeah. just became really real there.
It's
you
right
saw
there.
It very
wow.
evident.
Right,
yes.
right below the surface.
Yeah.
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 Like in right where our second location, we were just maybe a kilometer or 2 kilometers from the mother tree, which was a high place. It was a tree that the spirit of the surrounding area, in mm-hmm. particular tree until it burned down, was okay. the place where they did these offerings, you know, oh, where wow. they came and made just like, you know, there's a drink offering. There's a fat offering.
Oh, yeah.
There's matches.
Yeah.
Match offering.
Anything that you want healed, you would bring that piece of clothing
right.
to put on the tree.
Yep, crutches.
Anything.
Okay.
And then you just basically prostrate yourself in front of the spirit there.
Okay.
And then cursing, you know, there's a...
Oh, you're cursing your enemies?
Yeah, you could do all that.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
you,
wow.
could,
yeah.
you could get, you know, for good or for bad. It just
right.
depends on what your needs were.
Right.
You know, so.
But again, because, like, everything had, like, because fire is so important in Mongolia, because it's so cold all the
yeah,
time,
yeah.
you know, you die without fire. They believe that there's a god in their fireplace, mm-hmm. or in their, it's not a fireplace, it's a stove.
Right.
And so... You have rules about what you can put in there, you know, or you'll get mad, or they'll get mad,
spirits
or if a piece of
yeah.
wood falls out, how it falls, if you go to the Buddhist monk, they'll tell you what that means.
Okay.
So mm-hmm. every part of life has some sort of
connection
to the mm-hmm. spirit, but God isn't personal.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a conglomeration of spirits that are in the
mm-hmm.
area.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
But even here, just recently, a couple of my grandkids were given some stones from somebody the people gave it for good intention, because my grandson was having some night terrors. And they said, oh, just put this underneath your pillow.
Uh-huh.
And
okay.
I was like, okay,
we don't like that.
I can't,
yeah.
I can't have that in my house.
No,
I've been
no,
in too
no.
many
no.
places
yes.
where
yeah. Maybe
the
power
reality,
is to some, but not to us.
Right.
Right. No, absolutely.
But
absolutely.
Just the reality of
yeah.
the evil one.
And I'm sure then that's like such a demonic stronghold essentially there.
Right.
And then... trying to do ministry, I'm sure has a lot
right.
of
right.
like opposition.
Yeah.
While you're there, is my
yeah.
hunch.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like for myself, I learned to appreciate.
Yeah.
Some of it, because my mom died.
Okay.
When I was in Mongolia, and I realized she didn't know the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
And for the first time, all of the ceremonies that Mongols do when they lose a loved one, I totally understood.
Hmm.
Because when you have no hope
mm.
over somebody who you love and
mm-hmm.
where they are, if I could sit and feed dogs for 2 weeks and that guaranteed my mom a good place,
right.
I would do
in
it.
In a second,
right.
you'd do it.
And
yep.
so
yep.
I feel like it
yeah.
really helped us. It solidified our own faith, but also gave us a lot of empathy
mm-hmm.
for people who don't have that
mm-hmm.
and not... Mm-hmm. Not think that their patterns or their traditions are foolish.
Right.
As
right.
much
yeah.
as they do serve a purpose, and
yeah.
if we didn't
yeah.
have the Lord.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. I've even like had conversations with people, you know, and we have these things about baptism and what does baptism do and
yeah.
infant baptism.
Mm-hmm.
And I've tried to like, hey, we don't do infant baptism, but understand those that do,
yeah.
That's their child's salvation they're
sure.
talking about.
Right.
Sure.
Exactly.
If that's what they believe is going to happen with that, then we're doing it.
Right.
It's
exactly.
It's a similar kind of a thing.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So
yeah.
it's like understand the heart and the intent there, even if
there
we might
go.
Not agree with it.
Yeah.
But like let's
exactly.
yeah, let's approach them with that kind of I don't know, love and understanding.
Exactly, because then it gives way to opportunities to share Christ.
Right? Exactly.
Just naturally.
Yeah.
Because they're interested, because you're not condemning them.
Yeah.
Right.
So.
Yeah.
Or trying to correct.
Or correct, yeah.
Be the corrector.
Yeah. Exactly.
You know, it's like, that's not my place. I just want them to know about Jesus.
Yeah. And that's like, you didn't need people being your corrector when you were pregnant.
Right. Exactly.
It's like, you just need people to show you the love of Christ.
Yep.
Exactly.
Yep. Just help us walk and, help.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah. Okay, so, I mean, it's hard. It's like, we can keep talking about a 17-year period probably for a long time. But eventually, you come back to the States. I mean, when I came to Calvary, it was like when at least I met the boys more when they were in college and serving here in student ministries and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And so you'd come back.
Right.
Or I guess you guys were still there for some of that time, right?
Yeah.
And okay. Mm-hmm. Sorry.
College years, so they came back here and we'd kind of come and go.
Okay.
Yeah.
A little bit.
That's right.
So we came back in 2009 from Mongolia.
When we finished our work. Yeah.
Okay.
And so then you're having to, I mean, that's such a big, significant work and a long period of your life. It's like, I don't know. That feels like almost like a lot of people, like somebody that's been in a career that's like a law enforcement or something where they have an early retirement. And like, so it's almost, I know you're not retired, but you're kind of like, you're here. Yeah. You're like, okay, this work is done, but like now what, Lord? Right. Like,
right.
So how did you get from there to this, the next stage that you had with Northeast Asia?
So what happened? So when our work finished in Mongolia, right? So we came off the field and we were pretty tired.
Yeah.
Right. We had devoted ourselves to that work and privileged to see the churches planted and, to be part of that.
Yeah.
To be witnesses to that.
Yeah.
And used a little bit maybe, but that finished. We came home. We were wiped out, and I was basically done.
Yeah.
Right. So I was like, Lord, I'm done.
And done, we mean with missions. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, just, just like, get somebody else.
Yeah.
You
know, I'm, so, I gotcha.
Yeah. And well, the other thing, too, was that this is maybe a little too much information, but the thing was is that as missions has evolved, right?
Yeah.
So we went out under the old school, go there, and if you... if you die there,
you die.
It's okay. And, you just go.
and you're poor.
And it's a vow of poverty and all that, right?
Yeah.
So then, after a while, people started to come to the field.
Okay.
In the 90s and the early 2000s, right? And they're like, yeah, I got a 401k, got a house, I got all the stuff. And so basically, I just told the Lord, I said, you kind of owe me. Right?
Uh-huh.
I wish I didn't. I mean, but that's the truth.
Yeah.
Is that I was like, I went there. I did what you asked me to do.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I was faithful. Now I want a house.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep. Yep.
So
I want running water. I want.
Yeah. So
you're so selfish.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just like, totally. I know you felt totally selfish about saying
totally.
That.
But if you look back, right, it's like I was in my 40s, you have the, the kind of a midlife kind of reevaluation, so there's other things that are going on too, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But I was like, hey, I'm going to do this. So at this, right around the same time, I knew the Lord was calling us to Northeast Asia.
Okay.
Right. But I'm like, I'm not doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So I just said, I'm going to get a house. And so we did. And and I just pushed it, the sheer force of my own will or whatever. And God, I think, just permitted me to be able to do that, to run out of rope or whatever, And so we got a house and I took on a leadership role with the agency.
Mm-hmm.
And, in the back of my mind, not wanting to do it, but knowing that I got to do it.
Yeah.
Right? So then what happened is that, how many years were we in? A couple years in to the house, right? I don't think, but it's empty, right? In the sense that it didn't solve anything.
Okay.
Right?
It feels empty.
It feels
empty.
Yeah.
It just feels empty.
Okay.
So it didn't solve anything.
Yeah.
And you know deep down that you have more to do,
and
that he wants you to do something, So it's like I gave in,
yeah,
and And then something we said when we were finishing to get ready to go back overseas is that in walking with the Lord, up until that time, I've never felt what it's like to have the wind in your sails. You know, like mm-hmm. you know what the uphill slog is, right? Because you've done that, right? But never had the where you felt the wind in your sails, and you just knew that the Lord was carrying you on to what He had for you to do. Mm-hmm. And that's what happened when we set our sights on Northeast Asia. Mm-hmm. Just everything just started to click.
And I think mm-hmm. we really needed it at the time, because that whole period of our life of doing that did not accomplish what we thought we were going to accomplish. Okay. You know, like, and we thought we would be in a specific country living there and working.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And
with this Northeast Asia thing.
This is Northeast Asia.
Yeah. People can think about Northeast Asia. Yeah. Like, think about really hard to reach areas.
Yeah, figure it out.
Yeah.
So we really thought we were going to be in there. That we had no doubt. If it had to do with our faith.
Right.
Like, our faith, we had no doubt.
Because yep. God's big.
Yeah. We'd already seen God do in Mongolia with us.
Right.
Especially with us.
Yeah. By pointing to a page in a book.
Yeah.
It's like a amazing.
Yeah. So, cool.
So mm-hmm. to see God close doors was a beginning of a new
depth
of our walk with the Lord.
Spiritual walk with Him.
Of my call is to be obedient to my Lord.
Yep.
It is not what happens on the other mm-hmm. side of that. Yeah. I can't dictate that. I can't
also can't, I know it's very easy, I think, for all of us to minimize the work that we do, you know? And so even things like prayer, like intentional prayer walking in certain areas, I know that you've done.
Right.
Like, these are foundational works that are just starting to chip away. You know, it's like loosening the hard to open jar or whatever.
Exactly.
And so maybe you're just some of the first hands on that jar, but that thing is sealed shut. Hard.
Yeah. Right. And, and the fact that, having to just reevaluate success.
Yes.
And I think as Americans, that's just hard. You know, like, you're told what is success, and then you're thinking, oh, if you make the right decision, success is guaranteed.
Right.
Instead of, you can make the right decision and be killed for your faith. You know what I mean? So that is a reality. So
absolutely.
I feel like that's that whole season was about that.
Mm-hmm.
Very much learning about kind of what we're learning now with COVID, but how much power nations have, and being able to pray for the Lord to really intervene and really have a heart for the place we did live that is under immense oppression right now, just increasing.
Mm-hmm.
And so grateful for our government. I mean, a lot of times we don't really appreciate being an American.
Yeah.
Yeah, but we're all pretty fortunate.
We're all pretty fortunate to be here,
that we have.
even with our warts,
with our problems.
Yes. And problems, it's pretty neat, so.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah, that thing with the success, like, I think a lot of people even listening, it's, you know, because maybe they're not going to Mongolia or to Northeast Asia, but like, even like, I think everybody wants to have even this sort of ministry success versus life success, and but like, or money or something. I'm not talking about that, but like, I mean, I feel that way as a pastor. Like, we want to do well here at Calvary, and then we can think like, well, we did all this stuff for Easter, and we didn't have 1,000 extra people come and get saved, you know. And like, I think because we didn't have 1,000 extra people come and get saved, it was a failure, you know, or whatever. And it's like, sometimes it's hard not to have your head in that space, and then you're. It is, you're saying, Lord, like, hey, then what are you doing, right? Or why? Or what is it you're forming in me and in these people? And anyway, it's...
Yeah.
There's such a deeper sense of God wanting a relationship with us.
Mm-hmm.
So that need to cultivate being able to hear and to trust.
Yeah.
Like, okay, Lord, I haven't heard completely which way or not, but if you want us to walk this way, we'll continue in it. Shut the door.
Yeah.
And then learning to be content in the shutting of the door.
Yeah.
Yeah, because that was really very hard for me, because I would be where
we'd
we wanted
be
to be.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like that.
Yeah. Right.
And we don't rest real well.
Okay.
You know, I think that's something we've learned.
That's
we've learned
true.
Too, is that you know, it's okay to slow down a little bit. Yeah.
That's what I was wondering, if that sort of little 2 years that where you felt greedy or whatever, if that was just rest for you, though.
Yeah.
It was like,
I think so. I think it was God's grace.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, his mercy.
And he's so good.
Yeah.
I liken it to walk. So I feel like what I did is I walked down this mountain, and then I set whatever it was on the, you know, the ministry part of my life. And I set that down, and I walked this valley floor with him. Huh. Right. And he was so gentle through that 2 year period. Right. It was just gentle waiting. You know, he waited for me.
Right? Yeah. That's sweet.
That's just amazing. And then when we, you know, when I repented and we started to go for it, you know,
that's
just really cool.
That feels like
fatherly,
like good fatherly love, right?
He's just so good. He's just so good to us.
Especially when you know you're being a twit.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And you know that he really could lay the, you know, he does.
Right.
You know, he doesn't always do that. I mean, sometimes he does, but
disciplines those he loves.
Yeah,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But you know,
but we
he was gentle that time.
We came back. I wanted to say this to you because we came back for a home assignment because we weren't sure what was going to happen in the country we wanted to go to, and the country we're currently in was just really crazy. So we thought, let's take a year home assignment because we hadn't done that for quite a while, for probably 10 years.
Oh wow! Okay.
To be home for a year, extended period of time.
Okay.
Came home for grandbabies being born. That was it.
Just quick, getting out.
And so we were in the service, and you were preaching something on generosity. And to be honest, I can't totally remember
what you said.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. I forgot about that.
But we, you know, I was praying. You were leading us through a time of prayer about being generous, sacrificing, and so I was asking the Lord. Okay, Lord, what is it that you want me to sacrifice? And clear as day, he said, would you be willing to stay?
Hmm.
Wow. And literally the first thing out of my mouth is like, are you kidding me? Really? Like at this point in my life when all I wanted to do was go?
Yeah.
You are now saying that you want me to stay? Like there were times I begged him to say that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
And so it's been a new season for us looking at it going, okay, Lord, you know, we'll be obedient to what you have for us. And then what does that look like? So.
Okay. That's good. I mean, that's, I think that's all, like, it's pretty interesting for a person, for non-missionary people listening to this and hearing you hear, like, God saying stay was as hard for you as God saying go might sound to them.
Somebody else.
You know, or whatever.
Yes, yes.
So, and like, that's obedience, though, is listening to whatever it is that he says.
Well, and growth comes out of, you know what I mean? At least for
adversity,
me.
Adversity, you don't
adversity.
Have, you know.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah, that's where our growth comes in.
Yep.
So, right? We don't grow when everything's going
nobody arrives, right? We're always growing or always being pushed, and God knows where we need to be challenged. So. Mm-hmm.
Well, and it sounds like God then said, okay, here's another area that's like really easy and non-challenging for you to, as I say sarcastically, but as people at Calvary probably know, if they were tuned into the live stream or whatever, they're like last couple weeks ago or a few weeks ago, maybe when this actually airs, but they heard you talking about refugees and the ministry to refugees is kind of this next phase for you guys. And so a little bit, maybe just kind of more briefly, but of just how did that then, like, how did that get on your heart? How did that strike you?
Right. So the country that we were, you know, going into in Northeast Asia, they do have, you know, defectors or refugees.
Right.
So we thought, since we cannot go in there, let's start to work with those, that group of people that are living outside.
Okay.
So we tried to get involved with that. But what we found out was that there aren't that many.
Okay.
And they've all been out for quite a while. So they have other people that are already working with them and all of that, right? So there was really nothing for us to do.
Okay.
But at the same time, we're like, well, refugees, right? Like, so that was... It opened our eyes to it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, we thought, well, yeah, well, I don't know. We'll go into the part where they did the test, but you know, we thought that something might happen, and that there would be a need for people to be there, right? That there might be an overflow of people movement that would come across, right?
Yes.
And so we thought, well, maybe we could get some,
be in a surrounding country and be ready and waiting.
Get up to speed on what that would look like.
And get some experience.
Yep.
And then
yep.
little by little, it just kind of evaporated that whole tent situation.
Okay.
But the refugee thing was in our mind, on our heart.
Yeah.
Right. And then we were here. We just got home, and Aaron and Tim and the guys were thinking about going to Lesbos, Greece.
Yes.
Right. To work in Camp Moria, which is a refugee camp there.
Yep.
And we just said, can we go? You know, okay,
it was our first short term.
We've done a lot of long term stuff.
Very
short term.
Yeah, you hosted some short termers.
Yeah.
So anyways, they let us go.
They graciously let us go.
Yeah, I'm sure they're they're thrilled to have people of your level of experience and maturity.
It was a great trip.
Yeah, it was life changing again for us, you know.
Yes. So that. And that place, and I've been to Moria as well, and that place was extremely life-changing for me, just struck by, I mean, just the kind of horrific need and desperation and hopelessness. But then also like really beautiful, beautiful people.
Exactly.
It's like the UN or something, you know, when you're there, like you're with like, you know, within a stone's throw, you've got people from
everywhere.
Seven different countries that countries that like maybe you could never go to. Like, I'm not going to be able to go to Syria or Afghanistan into some of these villages these people are from and hang out with them. But I'm sitting there hanging out with them and having these broken conversations and having tea and them taking the pickaxe that I'm supposed to be
using
and taking it out of my hand because I'm not doing it right.
Yes, exactly.
And that was just all, like, wow. Yeah, I'm just so struck by all that. And I was struck by it. That came home and kind of told some of the stories.
Right.
And then that's actually why there was a trip the next
year.
Yeah. That you guys, so when you were there, kind of maybe some of what you saw or what struck you while you were there.
I think the thing, well, I mean, there's on the personal level and on the ministry level, kind of like. So on the personal level, being a grandma, seeing all the kids.
Yeah.
And feeling like, you know, the ultimate result of growing up for 10 or 15 years in a camp
somewhere.
Yeah.
It's not good for anybody.
No,
you know what I mean? And so just really having compassion for the kids, for the families, and feeling like I am them. If I was in the same circumstance
do
that they were in,
thing.
I would do the same thing.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
So just really finding empathy. I also felt this overwhelming sense that where's the church? Where are we? Like where it is such an opportunity, like you said, to talk with people that you would never be able to talk to, but be that first face of a Christian.
Yes.
That they may have never met.
Because they're never seeing Christians, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And to be able to love them and to be kind and to be thoughtful and
be his hands and feet.
Yeah, I just thought, this is so needed in my life, but in our church family's lives,
right?
To be able to have that perspective. And seeing is everything. Experiencing is everything, you know, more than that cognitive number.
Absolutely. Yeah. We were just talking, actually, like we were talking about, so we might, like we're considering our Christmas series is going to be something like compassion or the gift of compassion.
Yeah.
I was looking at what this word compassion actually means. It's like, it's, you know, Latin roots and all that, but it's to suffer with, to suffer together. And like, I think if you suffer with enter into that suffering, even in the, you know, even though when you're there serving in that camp, you're going back to your bed and you're going, you know, all of that. But still, in that moment, you're able, when you're suffering with or together, like you can, I don't know, there's just something about the way that it opens your heart and your empathy and your understanding of the need of God's, you know, God's work and all of that. Yeah. It's just, it all opens up for you.
It does. It does. And there's 80 million. Isn't it 80 million?
Yeah, that's right. You shared about that.
80 million now, close to, it's like 79 million. Something.
Displaced peoples.
Displaced people in the world.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. It's incredible.
That's crazy.
It is crazy.
And it's, and it's, I mean, Moria's in the news lately with the giant fire. I mean, it was just like in the, this biggest podcast almost in America of the daily, like this New York Times thing. They did a whole episode just like last week on Moria specifically and what's going on there. And it can sound pretty bleak, but also knowing then the work continues. And
they're
rebuilding a new camp. But like the thing that struck me when I was listening even to that podcast, every person they interviewed was like, almost like, I don't want to go though. I don't want to go back to the camp because that's,
oh sure.
Right.
And that it's almost, it's like, it's, that's not our home, right? That's
right,
like, this is supposed to be just a way station along, you know,
to
a stop on the way.
Next, whatever the next.
Exactly.
But then they're stuck for a year plus and it's really hard.
At the prayer meeting that we're having, we have a, I think it's a UN, the human rights. Oh, I can't remember what.
And that might be in the past when people listen to this
oh,
prayer
got
meeting
you.
You're going to do. just
so
FYI.
The prayer meeting
it's in the future
that,
when we're recording this.
Okay, yeah. Okay. So at this prayer meeting, we're going to show a video or we'll have shown a video.
Yeah.
And it talks about the average time that someone stays in a camp. And it was like 10 to 20 years.
What?
Right. Oh, there's a million Muslim refugees in Bangladesh.
Oh, wow.
A million. And there are camps in Africa that have been going for a long time.
Of course, in Palestinian
and Syria and Jordan.
So
we're learning a lot, and even locally, right? So part of our heart is that there are so many different groups of people that are now here in our own country, and they're untouched. Right, in terms of the gospel in many respects, because they silo in their own little areas, right? And for some reason, there's not a lot of work that's going to invite them to church or to just come out and, we're having a barbecue at our church. Why don't you just come and hang out with us?
And
these opportunities to actually invite people that are from Egypt or from Syria or, And so we got connected with a group called VOR right here in Anaheim.
Okay.
Voice of the Refugees.
Yes.
Through Matt.
And we're teaching English 3 days a week.
Yeah.
And that's fun, you know.
Yes.
But we're meeting some really neat people.
Oh, that's so good.
And I can't wait to bring them to church.
Awesome.
They all speak Arabic.
Yeah.
So I'm like, oh, am I going to need to learn some Arabic?
Learn a new language.
It's like, oh, boy.
because we talked about learning Spanish, because we want to work with refugees, but we also want to work with immigrants.
Our asylum seekers right here in Santa Ana.
Santa Ana. Yep,
absolutely.
So to be able to work
with
that.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
The field is white.
But we don't want to give up. We were excited. I know it can't happen now because of COVID, but one of the gals who's a Muslim, she was talking to her kids' favorite holiday is Halloween. So I'm like, oh, just wait till these are open.
I know.
Because our church does it.
It's Halloween. We're going to bring you.
And I said, you can come with me. And she goes, oh, but I'm Muslim. Can I come? And I said, of course you can come.
Yes.
That's who it's for. So,
that's so good.
I'm excited about opportunities in the future as the Lord allows more freedom of movement. But
if other people do have a heart for refugees too, like they could check out Voice of the Refugees, right? I mean, they could talk to you guys or Aaron Holm or Jonathan Smalley or Matt Doan.
Yep.
Totally.
Yep.
There's also a ministry that the Browns are involved with, with refugees, Home for the Refugees.
Yep.
I think
like
it's
that.
Home for the Refugees, but they do something where you partner.
You help sponsor,
Not a sponsor so much as... the group vets somebody, so they're either a refugee or asylum seeker, and then they get four or five families together to kind of help them out.
Oh, wow.
Like, where's the school? Where's this?
That's amazing.
Yeah.
How do you
and
do
so
the check?
Browns,
how do you write a, whatever, use the ATM? And
how do you go to the hospital?
Life skills.
And so the Browns are doing that.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so we've contacted the lady who runs that, and so we'd really like to learn more about what she's doing so we can... speak into it and get families involved, because that's awesome.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, that's really, really awesome.
Yeah.
But everybody should go to one of these camps.
Really should.
No matter how old, because we're old.
So
you can be at any age.
Right.
That's
It's our, I feel like it's our, it's something that is right before the church, right in front of us right now, where we have this mass movement of people.
Yes.
Right. And with all of the politics, and countries have their own situations, they're going to do what they're going to do. But the church is like, let's get in there and let's love these people.
Yeah.
And,
Yeah, that's what I've been saying for so long. It's like, people might think it's a refugee crisis, but for the church, it's a refugee opportunity.
Exactly.
And yeah. It really is an incredible opportunity for the gospel.
Right.
And it's right. I know for us, you know how you read scripture and all of a sudden everything's new a little bit.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so just the amount of time that God talks about helping the foreigner.
Yes.
Or the oppressed.
Right.
The stranger, or the alien among you.
All of these things.
You're just like.
That we just blew past them back in
I took it as comfort when I was the alien.
Oh, yeah.
In the country. I used to go, I'm so glad God thinks of me.
That's true.
But here. You know, we're commanded to love them as ourselves.
Yes.
And so...
Regardless of your politics.
Exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that is what we're called to do. So we just need to do it.
Yeah. Amen. I'm with you. And once we can... Once we're allowed to send teams again Greece and to, to Lesbos, we're going to be. And I know I was just talking with some people from Greater Europe Mission. And they're actually sending a bunch of missionaries in Europe who are sort of... COVID restricted from doing other stuff, but they're actually going to be going to Lesbos some
because they're in Europe
better
already.
Visas and stuff like that.
Super.
And so
that's
really like sending people that their current ministry is a little bit stuck, so let's adjust and dive in and go help for a while. It's good. I love that this is kind of where God's been leading you.
And we are too.
We want to just champion you and come alongside, and just excited for you to keep inspiring people at Calvary Church.
Thanks, Eric.
We love you. Like, is there anywhere that people can kind of like, I don't know, it's not like find out more about what you're doing or?
We have an email.
Okay. Yeah.
So Thomas and Gail.
Okay.
At gmail.com.
Okay.
Thomas and Gail at gmail.com.
That's all you have to do.
But it is TH. Thomas and Gail at gmail.com.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. And then they can ask us or go to, ask any of us pastors
church
to get you in touch.
Yeah. So. We already received from the Sunday past.
Yeah.
We got like 4 emails of people interested. So I'm really excited.
Oh, wonderful. That's perfect. Yeah. That's so good. So thank you for just being faithful to the Lord over the course of your life. And, I know you're like... You feel like normal people, but we think you're pretty awesome people.
Well, we think you're pretty awesome, too.
We think you're pretty awesome, too.
Well, thanks.
Love Calvary.
So thanks again, and thank you to all of you for listening to the Calvary Life Podcast.